Okay, it's officially 2:45. Hopefully it's 2:45 by your clock as well. Go ahead and get a good round of applause for all the people at TE 12, all the organizers. I did a great job. A lot of hard work went into this. And I appreciate you very much coming to the last session of the day. I know for a fact that there are far more fun things to do in Amsterdam than to listen to me talk about ASP.NET. So I do appreciate your time and your willfulness to come in. I want to introduce myself first, and I have an admission to make, admission of guilt. There was a catch, and I'll show you what that catch is in just a moment. My name is Brady Gaster. I am not Scott Hunter or Scott Hanselman. If you watch some of the talks that were done last week in Phoenix, Arizona, U.S., you may have seen some funny tweets come across the board. Apparently, it's in my contract that I have to change my name to Scott to talk about ASP.NET. So Hanselman has a new name for me. It's B. Scott Gaster. So if you ever see any references to that, that's what Hanselman calls me now, which is both flattering and somewhat intimidating at the same time. I've grown accustomed to Brady. I'd really rather not change it. Reflects my Irish heritage very well, so I'd like to keep it. My name is Brady Gaster. Up down at the bottom here, you'll see my Twitter handle, which is de facto the best way to get in touch with me. I'm always on Twitter. So if you follow me, I'll probably follow you back. We can chat all day, burn time. And then if you want to email me, there's my email address, bradyg@microsoft.com. Again, feel free to tweet me. I'll answer any questions that you have after this session. If you were in my SignalR session, I appreciate you coming to that as well. I've heard some great feedback from it, and I really appreciate that. It was a really fun talk to give. Hopefully this one will go at least 5% as well. That would be great. I'm going to go ahead and show you the next slide, because it's really the last slide. Like the SignalR talk, I'm really not going to do a lot of slides today. And that's because we have an exorbitant amount of data to cover in this talk. We're going to go through all this stuff. We're going to go through all this stuff very quickly. I'll be around for questions afterwards. I can tell you pretty confidently that I may just have to send some of your questions to Scott Hunter's team. Scott Hunter's team is the team, Damian Edwards, Scott Hunter, Scott Hanselman, Dan Roth. Those are the guys that sort of write the ASP.NET framework. So I just want to point them out because they're the guys that do all this hard work. I'm just a salesman, okay? I love those guys. They're friends of mine. We work together a lot. I host a TV show on Channel 9 called Webcamps TV, and I've interviewed the majority of Scott's team, and they're a lot of fun to interview, as is the tools guys. And the tools guys and Scott Hunter's team work very closely together. Obviously, we have to get everything right in Visual Studio so that you can write ASP.NET apps properly. And that's what we're going to talk about today, ASP.NET applications. Show of hands, how many of you have done web forms? Still doing web forms? How many of you do MVC? How many of you build APIs? Cool. That's exactly what I expected. We're going to talk about all those things today. And here's the dirty trick that I had. As you came up and you grabbed a sticker, I took your picture. Okay? And I'll show you how this works. It's basically a security monitor. And the reason it works is in the States, if you have a security system and your cat jumps in front of it and sets it off and the cops have to come to your house, they start billing you. Wouldn't it be great if your security system worked in such a manner that it detected skeletons rather than motion? Then you wouldn't have to worry about that unless there was actually somebody in your house stealing your stereo equipment. That would be a lot better, right? That's kind of where this idea came from. Just so you know, everything that this uses, we're going to talk about today, except, of course, for how to program against the connect. That's not necessarily my domain. That's the domain of a gentleman named Clint Ruckus. He's the BattleBots guy, and his colleague, Dan Fernandez. But what this does is whenever the connect sees a skeleton, it will actually take a picture and upload that picture using web API. Then it will persist that picture into blob storage in Azure. You may have noticed my title. I'm a Windows Azure technical evangelist. Azure is my bread and butter. Just so we can have a few laughs. Last picture that was taken. Some people contributing to the fun. So as you can see, as it sees skeletons, it takes their picture. So just sort of a neat idea on how you might be able to use a web API or a SignalR, because that page refreshes every single time there's a picture taken. The way it refreshes is web API. If you're in my SignalR session, you'll know that there's such a thing as a native client for SignalR as well as a web client. I'm going to show you the web client again during this particular session. But what happens is web API actually makes a call directly to SignalR, and SignalR updates the client. So as the picture gets taken, it gets posted directly to that web page live over and over again. Pretty neat, huh? All right. Let's figure out how all that works. I'll go ahead and close this down. And what I'm going to show you first is, you've probably heard Hanselman talk a lot about this notion of the one ASP.NET framework. And that is the name of this session. Okay? How many of you have had those conversations with your coworkers before? Well, I want to do it in web forms. I want to do it in MVC. I want to do it in web forms. Web forms is better. MVC is better. Blah, 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 blah. Have you ever had that conversation? Don't be shy. You've all had that conversation. Okay, well, what we want to do is we want to get rid of that. We want to get rid of that fracturing, and we want to bring you back to ASP.NET. We want to show you that, yes, there are these awesome things like Azure and Forefront Services and yada, 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 and all these wonderful IT things that we're doing, but we haven't forgotten about the web. We're continuing to add awesome capabilities to the ASP.NET runtime and framework, and we're continuing to add awesome things to it, like SignalR, like Web API. Things that you previously had to use something like a module or a handler to do, we're going to basically make it easier for you to do that right now. And for all the MVC guys out there, if you've ever said something like Web Forms is dead, you're wrong. We're continuing to add stuff to Web Forms, just like we're adding stuff to MVC. Some of the ideas that we got with MVC, we're going to backport into Web Forms. So some of the things, like one of the things you may have seen up on the outline earlier was model binding. You can do that in MVC today. You can also do that in Web Forms today. So we have model binding in Web Forms. There's all these awesome things that you can do in Web Forms that all the MVC guys are like, well, you can't do this. You'll be able to do that stuff in Web Forms as well. So with that, I want to dive right in. And like I said, this is going to be a majority demo. If you want to see Scott Hunter's version of this talk, he is the, you know, the head cheese of the department. So if you want to see his talk, he did this talk in Orlando, and that talk is on the Channel 9 website. I highly encourage that you take a peek at his talk if you haven't already, just so you can hear it from the horse's mouth, or like the chief horse's mouth. So if you just want to hear what he has to say about it, highly encourage that you go out and look at this. He mentored me on this particular talk, so he couldn't be here today. But first thing I'm going to do is I'm going to go into Visual Studio 2012, and I'm going to show you one of the ways that we're catering to the need to have a less fractured ASP.NET framework. We know that we want to glue all the stuff together. We know that we want to have kind of a unified approach. So what we've got here is Visual Studio 2012. Now, you've all seen this dialogue. What do I choose from? I'm afraid I'm going to get locked in. If I make an MVC project, can I do web forms in it? Can I use controls? If I make a web API project and I realize later on I have to have a front end, what do I do then? Am I locked in? Am I locked out? Imagine if this only had one guy here, and it was just web project, ASP.NET web project, instead of having MVC, yada, 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 yada. What I'm going to show you is a prototype Scott Hunter's team is working on as to how that might be possible in the future. Imagine that the only thing you see in this first dialogue is ASP.NET project. And then you get to select all the pieces. You can go ahead and applaud. You like that idea? Okay. Well, I'm going to show you how that'll work. I'm going to go ahead and I'm going to create an empty web project. And the next dialogue you're going to see, kind of ugly. It's a prototype. It's currently in working state. But what this is a list of all the different things in the one ASP.NET framework. Do I want MVC? Do I want web pages? Do I want web forms? We want all of them. We want all of them. So what I'm going to do is I'm going to uncheck some core guys here, and I'm going to go ahead and click on the ASP.NET MVC starter sample. Then I'm going to click on the ASP.NET Web Forms starter sample. And then I'm going to click on the ASP.NET Web Pages starter sample. Anybody in here ever heard of Web Matrix? Or have you used Web Matrix? Great product. You got to try Web Matrix too. It's awesome. If you are getting started with open source development, PHP, Node.js, Web Matrix has support for all of that. Right now, you can only do .NET in Visual Studio. You know, I have no idea what's a VNext next, but you know, you can do the other stuff on WebMatrix. What I'm going to do here is I'm going to select all the different pieces that I want to exist in this application, and I'm going to click install. I'll give you one guess. Somebody brave raised their hand. Where do you think all those things are going to be pulled from? NuGet. Everything in the ASP.NET world lives out there as NuGet packages. So when I pull this guy up, now I can tell you that these NuGet packages are local. This is a prototype, and it took a little bit of manual work to get it to work, because this is still an RC product. Scott Hunter said this in his Orlando talk, so I'll go ahead and say this now. This prototype will not only be in the RTM version, it won't be ugly in the RTM version. Okay? So we've already got this. We know that we want to do this. If you've seen Hanselman do this talk, it's probably funnier. I don't use animated GIFs like he does. But you've probably seen all these different capabilities. But they can all live under one hood, under ASP.NET 4.5. Now what I'm going to do here is I'm going to deliberately cause a failure. I'm just going to go ahead and hit F5. The reason it's going to fail is I don't have any default route set up. I don't have a default ASPX page or anything like that. What I'll do is I'll go up here and I'll go to MVC/post. And now I've got an MVC app. So there's our MVC application. And let me zoom in a little bit. Can everybody see that all right? Is that okay? There. Is that any better? I'll keep zooming in until somebody says it's cool. You won't be able to see one letter on the board by the time I'm done. Okay. So I'm going to do create new. I'm going to say, hello, TechEd Europe, blah, 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 blah. 01, 01, 2000. I'll just put my birthday in there. 10/31, 1972. Yes, I was born on Halloween, and it is the greatest day of the year. Okay, that's MVC. I've just created a note in a database using an MVC app. Cool, huh? Not a really big deal. How do I know it works with web forms? I'll go to the web forms page. So this is a web forms page. It's pulling from the same data source. It's pulling the same object. It's using the same entity framework. Don't believe me? Hello again. Blah, blah, blah. Put in my wife's birthday. Yeah, whatever. All right. So, this is going to be recorded. She's like, you suck. All right, so there's one, there's the other, one application, one framework, MVC, web forms, entity framework, database, not done yet. Up here, I want to go to web pages. It's not pretty. We haven't styled it yet. But this is the web pages version of this. The reason I mentioned WebMatrix uses web pages. It can't do things like MVC. It can't do some of the stuff that Visual Studio can do. And the way that it does what it does is it uses the third option, which is web pages. I'm going to introduce you to web pages today. But just to show you that this is indeed working. And again, blah, 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 blah. And we'll just 01/2012. And we'll hit insert. There. Guess what? You don't have to choose anymore. Is that pretty cool? You guys like that idea? Cool. Now, I'm going to move right along. I'm going to shut that guy down. Before I do, I'll show you that dialog one more time. That's what it's going to look like in the future. Again, it'll be prettier. But the nice thing is, it is one ASP.NET framework. And you have it all together. And the way you have it all together is because we've introduced NuGet. We've introduced the ability for you to pull what you need in and take out what you don't need whenever you figure out that you don't need it. I'm going to dive a little bit deeper now. I'm going to hit escape here. And what I will do next is I'll open up this web pages guy in Visual Studio. I'm going to run it as admin just to be safe. And I'll go up here and I'm going to say file, open, website. And it knows where I want to go because I've done this a few times already. And this is my web pages implementation. So if I were to run this guy, it's just going to have, you know, pretty basic. Whoop, that's not good. Can do this. There we go. So there's our template, and you'll see that this template kind of exists throughout. This template exists in the ASP.NET web forms, ASP.NET MVC, and obviously it exists in the web pages. We've kind of given you a nice template to start with. I'm going to go a little bit into more detail later on about how this template's going to work, how it's friendly with HTML5, how it does some neat stuff with CSS. I'm going to get into all that stuff. But first, I want to show you something that's probably frustrated you throughout the life cycle of your development. How many of you have had to use, personalization of membership, the PNM database? Or you said, I don't like that because it uses GoIDS's IDs and I'm going to make my own. And it's the first thing you have to do every single time you build a web application is build how your users are going to be stored. You ever had to do that? How many of you think that's a little frustrating because we have things like Twitter and Google and OAuth and blah, 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 OpenID? Wouldn't it be great if ASP.NET could do that? Let's show you how. So what I want to do is I'm going to close this down. Before I do, I want to launch it one more time and go back to login. And you'll see that I've just got the text box here, use another service to log in. Well, how would we do that? If you've ever messed around in Web Matrix, you're probably familiar with this file right here. It is, this file right here, appstart.cshtml. For web pages, that's kind of like your global file. You can put all of your startup stuff in there. Put all your startup stuff in there, and then you can use it however you want. What I'm going to do is I'm going to scroll down here, and you'll see here's one for Windows Live, here's one for Twitter, here's one for Facebook. By the way, this appstart.cshtml, if you were to use a web page, if you were to use Web Matrix for this, their starter kits or their starter samples, they have a file like this as well, and you can do all this stuff in Web Matrix. You know why? Because Web Matrix is built on top of web pages, which is built on top of the one ASP.NET framework. Okay, it's the same sort of idea. It runs across both tools. But what I'm going to do right here, so I'm going to go ahead and say, OAuth web security dot, I'm going to say register OpenID client. And look what we're going to give you, built-in OpenID client. Everybody see that? Oh, darn it. Built-in OpenID client. And then I'll go ahead and say Google. So we're going to log in using Google. Yes, a Microsoft guy is going to log in using Google. Okay. Forgive me. Now what I'll do is I'll go over here. I'll go into login. There's some other code up here. Again, a lot of this code is going to be cleaned up. What you're looking at is a prototype project. This will be cleaned up a little bit between now and the time RTM goes out. And I'm going to go ahead and say login using your Google account. And I want to go over here and set this value to Google. And is it already running? Yes. I'll go ahead and do a compilation, which I don't think matters because it's web pages. And I'm going to hit refresh. And we have this little Google button on here. Let me see if I'm still plugged in. No. Sorry. A little unprepared for that one. We'll give it a second to fill up with IPs. Okay. See if I can get to Bing real quick. Okay, we're good. So now I'm going to click on Google. And I'm going to go over to the Google OpenID site. It's going to say, hey, do you want me to authorize this website running on localhost to authenticate you? Yeah, we don't mind. So I'll click allow. Look there. Everybody see this up here? See where I'm logged in? I just logged in using Google. If I could remember my Yahoo password, I would show you that too. But it's that easy. You just put the button there and you go crazy and party all day. Last night I tried to do this using a Twitter app. There's a couple of extra configuration steps that I'm just not privy to at this time, so I'm not going to show you that one. But the point is that you no longer have to roll your own authentication paradigm. You no longer have to use PNM. We know that everybody in the universe has a Twitter account or a Facebook account. What is it, like 2 billion users at this point? It's like bigger than some countries. So why not just use that authentication data and authenticate users against those providers? We're going to give you that ability. Once RTM comes out, this is not only going to be available on web pages, but once again, what's the name of this talk? One ASP.NET. It's going to be available across the board. You'll be able to do this in MVC, in web forms, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. Who thinks this is a nice advantage? All right. gave me time to look at my cheat sheet. Thank you. Okay, and now what I'm going to do is I'm going to open up a different solution just to kind of walk through all these things. And this is going to be the ASP.NET web forms section. So those of you that thought web forms was dead, here to tell you you're wrong. Damien gets very upset when everybody starts to argue MVC over web forms. Some of the stuff that you'll see in here has actually been around in web forms for a while, such as asynchronous stuff. If you were in my SignalR talk, one of the things I pointed out was that some of the functionality in SignalR makes use of some of the ASP.NET asynchronous functionality that has been around for years. That functionality is going to get better in 4.5. Have you guys heard of TPL, Task Await Library? That's why it's going to get better, because now you don't have to write all this spidery callback code whenever you want to do an asynchronous call. Has anybody ever written something like that? Like, I handle this event with this method, with blah, blah, blah. You have to do all these squirrely calls. It's really annoying when you have to close it, and it's like semicolon, close paren, semicolon, da-da-da-da-da. Okay, so we're going to get rid of that for you, and I'm going to show you how right now. I'm going to open up one page in here called async, F7 to browse the code. Right now, in the page load example, I'm running the old school async example. See the name? Run old school async example. Down here, you'll see what that example is going to do. I'm going to create a web client. I'm going to use a Lambdas expression because I'm not a big fan of adding methods when I don't have to, if all I want to do is process an event. If you're not familiar with this syntax, you will be. It's just a handy way of doing basically event handlers. Has anybody used this method already? Okay, cool. I could show you the other way. I could add an old method or add an event handling method, but trust me, that little sub S, comma E, that's basically a shorthand way of me adding an event handler. So if you haven't done this yet, just stare at that for a minute. It'll sink in, and then you can just party with that rather than actually bloat your objects with extra methods. I'm going to point that out. But what I do is whenever the download string completed event fires, I'm going to take the result, which is basically text, and I'm going to stick it into a literal control on my page. Then I'm going to call download string async. If I wanted to do this synchronously, I could do download string. You've probably seen that. But I don't want to do that. I want to do download string async. I'll go ahead and do that again. And I'm just going to go out to Microsoft.com and take the HTML that I get and slap it in a literal. Okay? So I'm going to run this. And before you go, I got a demo fail, I know it's going to fail. The best way to prove something to you or the best way to get it stuck in is to fix it, right? So I'm going to scroll over here and I'm going to see this async equals false. See this error message. An asynchronous operation cannot be started at this time. You have to mark your page as though it supports async. Anybody seen this error? Okay. If you haven't, you'll probably get used to it, but here's how you can avoid it. If you know that you're going to have async execution in your web forms page, you just set async equal to true in your directives, and now you can do asynchronous calls on the server side. So I've just done that, and I'm going to go ahead and hit F5. Boom. And what this says is, I know you're looking at me from a bot, so I'm not going to show you the HTML from Microsoft.com. All right? But who likes to do all that squirrely code? I admit that I do. I'm fighting the async task stuff. I'm getting used to it. But I'm kind of accustomed to this callback stuff. The reason I like it is I like fluent programming. Anybody else here a fan of fluent programming? Okay. I'm a big fan of that. I really don't have any problem with some of the callback stuff, but a lot of developers find it very difficult. That's okay. It's okay for you to find it difficult because it's a different way of thinking about the order that you write your code. Wouldn't it be great if you could do stuff asynchronously, but write your code in such a way that you could read it and not have to see all these lambdas and crazy expressions? Wouldn't that be awesome? What I'm going to do is I'm going to shrink the old school example, and I'm going to show you the new school example. But before I do, I'm going to comment this line of code out, and what you're going to see is that I'm no longer calling using a series of callback methods. I'm using this word right here, await, and you'll see that it's underscored, and I'm going to use that as another teaching tool in a moment. So what I'm saying is, I want you to call the download string task async method. It's an extension method that hangs off web client whenever you import that the system.task or whatever it is. And the await keyword, what that does is it says, I know this process is going to take a little while to run, but whenever you're finished, do this with whatever you get back. Now, why do I have a red squiggle on that guy? Because I have to come up here and I have to mark that method as an asynchronous method. This combination was confusing as all get out for me when I began to mess with this sort of programming. But think about it like this. If you're going to do something asynchronous in a method, you'll probably use the await keyword within your method. If you know you're going to have to use the await keyword within your method, if you mark your method with async, it'll work. It'll just plain work. Now we don't have to have all those lambdas and event handlers like we had up above, because it's all going to be done in this method alone. So what I'll do is I'll run this guy again, and it should just work. Now, one thing that I will show you real quick, I could take this code, I could take it out, and I could put it right here, and then I would come up here and mark my event handler with async, and it's going to work as well. So you can take all those protected classes that you get, all the page load event handlers and all that good stuff, or any additional overrides that you make, you can make them asynchronous just by putting async in front of them. Okay, I'm going to run it one more time so you can see how that'll work. It's going to be the same thing, but I just want to prove it to you. There we go. Now, why would you want to use async? Why in God's name would you want to use async? The reason why is if you use asynchronous processing on the server side with your ASP.NET pages, each individual call will do something different. You know how now when you do a synchronous call, if I make a request to the server and then you make a request to the server and I beat you to it, you'll be waiting for my request to complete. If you do asynchronous, you don't wait, because everything's running asynchronously. What happens is IIS will release the thread. It'll actually release that thread, and you can get better performance from your applications and scale your applications for more users, because IIS isn't hanging on to each individual thread. It's letting go of that thread and allowing it to run in the background. Okay? And it tracks it automatically for you. Pretty nice, huh? You can increase the scale of your applications and increase the throughput just by using asynchronous execution. Pretty cool. Validation will be next. And what I'm going to do here is I'm going to open up request validation. And this is pretty much just going to be a simple page. And in this page, we're going to do two things. I'm going to allow somebody to post something to me, like a blog post or something like that. And I'm going to give them the ability to do a title up here, and then I'm going to give them the ability to enter some text in here. I attended this awesome talk on 1ASP.NET and gave it a great eval. Okay. And what I'll do now is I'm going to select this, make it bold, select that, and we'll strike that out. Okay. And now I'm going to post this. Boom! You ever seen that before? Somebody wants to post HTML to the server and you go, bad. All right. What do you have to do? You have to go up to the top of your page. You have to turn on request validation, or in this case, turn off request validation, and basically open the whole page up to attack. So now I can go into my rich text editor and I can type in some data, type in some HTML, or I could go into that name box and I could type in HTML there too. Wouldn't it be awesome if you could validate on a control-by-control basis? Okay, let's do that. The way we're going to do that is I'm going to go down here to this multi-line text box. And I can't remember what it's called. Validate request mode. Disabled. Done. Now what I'll do is I'll go back to this page, hit refresh, give it a title, give it some text. Give it some more realistic text. This time I'll post it. And we're good. But what if they go up here and type in some script. So now I've selectively done request validation on individual fields. So you can basically allow somebody to post HTML from their rich text editor and not HTML from some other field. Pretty cool, huh? Is that handy? You guys like that idea? Cool. Speaking of validation, what I'm going to do real quick is open up another page. Unobtrusive validation. And this is basically just an ASPX web form. You can see that I've got some controls on it. I've got some validations on it. Got all kinds of stuff on it. And what I'm going to do now is I'm going to run this page, and I'm going to show you something that should look pretty familiar. It should also make your skin crawl. Okay? We're still using that 10-year-old validation methodology. If I scroll down here, does that look familiar? How many of you have cringed when you've seen that JavaScript? It's 10 years old. Don't be ashamed. Raise your hands. And you'd rather see something like HTML5 validation there, right? Let's change this page so that it will use unobtrusive validation, so that it won't use all this gobbledygook JavaScript code. We're going to change it in such a way that it's a little bit cleaner and a little bit more compliant with current standards. I'm going to hit F7, and we're done. I'll compile it. And what we do is we set the page's unobtrusive validation mode property, we just set that to unobtrusive validation mode.webforms. There's not an MVC one, it's just like on or off. It could be true or false. But this is how you would basically turn on unobtrusive validation. And I'll show you what the difference is right now. Go ahead and hit F5. Do a view source on it. Expand everything a little bit. And you still got your do post back because we're still in a web form. But look. See that JavaScript? It's not there anymore. Guess what it's been replaced by? It's been replaced by things like data val operator, data val type, data val error message. What does that look like to you guys? HTML5. That's the data attribute that you can use however you want to. We can use this with like jQuery validation. You can use this in a lot of different client-side validation techniques. And the code is going to be much cleaner, and it's going to be much more semantic. If your code is more semantic, what does that mean for your SEO? It's better. Better SEO, more traffic. Hairier code, less traffic. You guys see the benefit we're giving you here? Makes your validation code a lot cleaner, and that's all well and good. One thing you'll also see up here, let me go ahead and show you all this. 25-30 requests we're making to this page to get all those JavaScript files and all those CSS files. You ever been to ASP.NET and seen like all the ASP.NET resources out there that those guys work on all the time? Scott says in his Orlando talk that they realized they were making over 60 requests per page load before they implemented what I'm going to show you now. What I'm going to show you now is optimization through bundling and minification. Those are also two NuGet packages that you can pull into your project whenever you want to get performance improvements. I'm going to show you some numbers that will probably make you pretty impressed. I want to go over here if I'm not running. I'm going to go over here to optimization, and you'll see all these different guys. Now, I'll view the source again just to show you that we haven't done anything yet. Still got all these pages, these files right here. And what I'm going to do is I'm going to hit F12 to open up the IE tools. I'm running an IE10 here. And I'm going to click Start Capturing. And I'm going to go ahead one more time and refresh this page. And what you're going to see here is that I've made 20 requests, and I've sent 8.96 kilobytes, and I've received 11.37 kilobytes. So I've made 20 requests, gotten 11 KB. Make sense? All right. Now what I'll do, I'm going to make one small change. I'm going to go over here, see the compilation, debug is equal to true. We're going to make it false. I'm just going to change it to false. As soon as I do that and refresh that page, it's going to know that it needs to bundle and optimize everything for me on the fly. I'm going to show you how it does that next. What I'll do now is I'll hit F5 to refresh this page. And now you see that we've made 8 requests, and we've shrunk our page to 6.64 kilobytes. We've reduced the load time by over half. We've reduced the number of hits by over half. You guys ever use like performance analysis tools on your websites and you think to yourself, well, how can we make this faster? Our site's really slow. And on the server, you've like done all sorts of caching and all sorts of crazy stuff. And on the client, you notice you've got 400 files getting downloaded every single time somebody hits your page. Guess what? That's what's happening. What you'll see right here is that we're doing things like bundling. So if I were to expand this out, what happens is that there are certain file sets that are going to get bundled. There's our jQuery. There's another jQuery. We're making a call right here that's text JavaScript. This is basically a bundle of all the JavaScript files in a particular folder. It just compresses them and minifies them on the fly for me. We're going to go through a couple of examples on how that works for you right now to kind of give you a deeper dive into what exactly is going on with bundling and minification. Close all these pages down. And I'm going to open up that optimization page. You'll see a couple of different URLs, content CSS, custom JS, et cetera, et cetera. The first one that I'm going to look at here is this app start, and you'll see bundle config. Now, in this guy, there's a couple different calls. One is to enable default bundle. So it's going to look in my scripts folder. It's going to shrink all that stuff up into one big file. And the squirrely characters that it puts on the end, that's an e-tag for all intents and purposes. You guys ever heard of an e-tag? It's basically a way for the client to say, hey, has this file changed since the last time I requested it? And the server goes, no, you've got it. Okay, you've already got the most updated file. Wouldn't it be great if you could take all 700 JS files that you've got, compress them into one little file, minify it, take out all the white space, and just send that one file down and say, the last time it was updated was last May. You don't ever need to download it again. You've already got it. So that's a way of us improving that performance for you. Guess what else we do? On the wire, we gzip it. So all that stuff is going to be compressed on the wire, too. Imagine the performance benefit you're going to get right there. Imagine all the different CSS files that you've created, and they're all pretty, and they've got all kinds of indentation and yada, yada, yada. All that white space, that's data. Not just in Python. That's data in ASP.NET, too. Okay, so what we're doing is we're stripping all that out, we're compressing the file, taking out all that stuff that you don't really need, and then sending the result down the wire. We'll also see here that you can add your own static bundles. In this case, I've got a couple of different files that we're going to load. And I'll go ahead and run that right now. I'll go ahead over here and look at static JS bundle, and I'll click that. Look what we've done. Taken a couple different files and compressed them. All these files that we've just compressed, if I look at static bundle, we're taking the ECMAScript5.js, which is in scripts.custom. I'll open up scripts.custom. That's what that looks like until we bundle it and minify it. So that's one script. Got another one right here, go to definition, and this one. Shrunk all those files into one tiny little file. If I were to also go to bundle, we've taken these two files and compressed them as well. So you've got all this with all the comments, all the white space, all the different requests that you're going to have to make to each individual file, or you've got one call, it compresses it and takes out all the data that you don't need. Now think about when you're talking about jQuery, and jQuery has all those like comments and documentation to make Visual Studio do awesome things like IntelliSense. That's data that has to get passed down the wire unless you bundle it and minify it. Then you take all that data out, you've got smaller requests, you've got fewer requests, you've got faster sites. Fast sites, good times, right? We take it a little bit further than that too. Over here we've got CSS bundle. What I can do is I can close down these scripts and I'll find that we have a CSS bundle somewhere in here, content.css. Now look what I've got. I've got two files right here, CSS3, and site.css. Pretty long, pretty well formatted, because somebody probably did Control-K, Control-D, they wanted it all pretty. But again, all that white space takes up room, and those requests take up time. So what we've done is we've bundled it so that whenever I make a call to /content/CSS, it's all going to get bundified for me. I'll go ahead and open that. Look at that. That's those files shrunk, compressed, and minified. And again, compressed on the wire using gzip compression. Go ahead.
Does it work with ASP.NET teams? Because if you have team in upper_teams, it will automatically reference all CSS files in there. Can I make it to work together?
I believe that you can. I mean, basically what you can do is you can create your own static bundles, like what we've done in here. Like if you have a series of files that you want to kind of put together, you can put like any combination of them together. What we've done in the themes right here, the question is, does this work with themes? So if I've got all these different themes, here's an example of how we're doing that.
No, I mean ASP.NET themes.
ASP.NET themes?
ASP/themes.
Teams or themes? Like a
Like a
skin file. I believe that it will. My understanding is that it will, because what you're doing is you're basically telling it, I mean, if your themes really have nothing more in them than CSS and JavaScript, this will compress those. It won't necessarily compress the HTML. So let's take it offline, though. Okay? Keep going. Might answer your question later on. If what you mean is to actually compress the individual layout files, no, it won't do that. You can make it compress all the static files that are in your site, but not necessarily the ASPX files themselves. Okay, please. Sorry, just not answering the question right. So that's that. Now, one of the other things, have you guys ever heard of CoffeeScript? Have you ever heard of CoffeeScript? Ruby community is really, really big. One of the things that we've got in here is this dynamic folder bundle. And what we're passing into this guy, I'm passing it the string, basically like what I want the URL to look like, and the extension of the files that I want it to process. And I'm going to go ahead and click on this coffee minify, and you'll see that we're actually using a NuGet package here that does CoffeeScript compilation. And then this guy, I've got a process file, and I'm going to basically compile my CoffeeScript code into regular JavaScript code. If I were to go, where would it be? CoffeeScript. So I've got these CoffeeScript files right here. And what we want to do is basically compile that code into JavaScript. So whenever I click on right here, dynamic CoffeeScript, look at that. On the server side, it's going to run all the CoffeeScript compilation, generate the HTML, generate the JavaScript, compress and minify the JavaScript, and then compress it on the wire as well. So we've got CoffeeScript support in ASP.NET. It's not just in Ruby, it's also in ASP.NET. I'm going to point that out. In addition to that, if you've ever heard of Less, if you've ever seen Mads Christensen talk, he's really, really big into CSS and Less, and he wants to make CSS a lot less painful for everybody. He's a big fan of Less, and he's incorporated a lot of Less stuff into the CSS editor that you'll see in Visual Studio 2012. If you haven't done any CSS stuff in here yet, I'll show you one of the nice little features. I can say color. Look at that. So you've got a color picker now. You know how it picks those colors, the first series of colors that are in that color picker? It scans your CSS file to see all the different colors that are in there. It'll scan your CSS file and say, hey, it looks like these are the colors that your site's using, the theme that your site's using. So I'm just going to kind of put those colors in the first of the list so that you can do it yourself. If you don't like that, you can click down, and you've got this guy. And if you don't like that, you can click this little icon right here, which you can't see when I zoom in on it. I'll have to do that again. I'll expand this guy. And what you'll see is a dropper. I'm going to click that color, and I'm good. So that's the kind of thing that you can do in 2012 now if you're big into CSS. If you've had frustrations with CSS in the past, this is going to probably make your life a lot easier. Picking colors is a lot easier, too. But going back to the Less concept, here's a Less file. And with Less, it's sort of like compiled CSS. I can make this function up here called rounded corners, and I can give it a default parameter of 5 pixels. So I want the radius to be 5 pixels, unless somebody specifies otherwise. Whenever that method gets called, what's going to happen is CSS is going to get built on the server side and sent down the chain, sent down the wire. So you're going to get all this stuff that comes down the wire. what we've done in our configuration is given you the ability, and again, this is a NuGet package, .less.core. It's basically a processor, a less processor written for .NET. So I can basically say less.parse, and it's going to go through and parse out all that CSS in the less files and generate CSS for me on the fly, and I'm going to be able to have regular CSS. Nice thing is, when you bundle that right here, it's going to basically run anything with the less extension and give you some basic CSS. So what I'll do right now is dynamic less. I'll click that, and I'll do an open. And again, you'll see normal CSS. It's basically executed and compiled that stuff on the server, generated normal CSS, and passed it down the wire. Pretty nice. Especially if you have repetitive CSS things that you have to do, like rounded corners, and you want to basically say rounded corners 5 over here and 3 over here. You can make a method, call it from less. You don't have to write all that CSS. You just do it one time, and you're good. Just want to point that out. It's one more way that we're optimizing ASP.NET. I'm trying to think of anything else. Dynamic less, dynamic CoffeeScript. And here's our JS bundle. If I clicked out, I already looked at that one. Looked at the CSS bundle. The point is, we're shrinking the stuff on the wire for you. We're making the pages more optimized. We're making things a lot easier. And now I'll move into something that's probably really near and dear to everybody's heart, and that's model binding. All right? What I'm going to do now is go into the model binding page, which is right here. Which one is that? Modelbinder.aspx. Okay, so I'll go into this page, and I want to go and do a view source so that you can see what I'm doing is basically using Entity Framework to load in some entities. They're basically person entities. I'm going to load those in at runtime, call the database, give me some entities back, and then I want to bind them. Now, in the past, you've had to use things like the eval keyword, and you pass in whatever, you know, property you want to have there. It's kind of frustrating because it's not strongly typed. It can be a little bit annoying. I never really liked that syntax all that much, so model binding is pretty cool to me. What I can do over here, go ahead and strip this out. So I'll show you how this works. I've got this form view, this web forms form view, and there's a new property on all the controls called item type. That's the type of item that I'm going to bind this particular control to. And it is strongly typed. If I go right here, hold this down, I'll look for person. I'll hit enter right here. And when I go into my format that I want, I'm going to have IntelliSense. So instead of having to figure out the eval syntax to use what I always call the evil syntax, you'll have strongly typed model binding here. So you'll be able to do all this stuff right directly in your ASPX pages. It's not just for MVC. You can do all this model binding right here. When I load this up, we'll see right here that I've got Scott Hunter, one of my favorite people at Microsoft. I can go ahead and update his stuff. And if I go over here and I look at modelbinder2.aspx, I'm going to show you a little bit more details on some of the stuff that we've done. And the way I'm going to do that is I'll open up modelbinder2, and I'll scroll down here, and you'll see that we've commented out the use of text box, and instead we're using something called a dynamic control. And the dynamic control, again, up here you see, if I were to scroll up to the form view, you'll see that I've got the item type is set to the person entity in that form view, and down here below, I'm binding it to the data field. So I'm telling it, in the form view, this is the type of object that you're going to be displaying, and in my dynamic control, I'm telling it which property is going to be displayed in that dynamic control. Why would you want to do that over a text box? Because it's going to give you the ability to do edits and stuff right there all in one control. So if I go to modelbinder2.aspx and I hit edit, see, we're still on modelbinder2.aspx, and if I back all this out, see how these things automatically show me right here? Hey, you've got to put something in this. And if I move my mouse over it, it's going to go ahead and generate the title. The last name field is required. I move it over this one, first name field is required. It's a little bit better than adding a text box and a validation control and a regular expression validation control and all that good stuff. Right? It's a little bit easier, who would say? I can show you what that entity looks like real quick. Model. I look here at person. And you'll see that I'm requiring the first name, and I'm requiring the last name. I'm not requiring the title, so we don't have a text box on the page for it. But what I'll do is, go ahead and hit refresh here. refresh this guy and go to edit. And when I try to type, 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8, 9, 0, and I keep going, I can't enter anything else. Because I've said that the max length for that field is 10. So it's actually going to stop input at 10. It's not going to blow up whenever I post it and it's too large. It's not going to hit my database, corrupt anything because I sent too much data up the wire. It's actually going to stop me from entering too much information. So that's some of the neat stuff that we have in web forms now, some of the stuff that we've added. Talked about modernizer and some of the, talked about, not modernizer, but some of the model binding stuff. And now I'm going to get into MVC, and I'm going to show you some of the new stuff in MVC. Question? In this particular circumstance, it's going to be sent down and done on the client. So it'll be done down on the client side. It won't let you post it, basically is the idea. The question was, is the validation going to be done on the server side or on the client side? In this case, it's going to be passed down to the client. We'll allow the client to do it. Okay. Now what I'm going to do is kind of switch gears and close this down and close down this lesson CSS file. And I'm going to open up a new instance of Visual Studio 2012. And I'm going to create a new MVC project. And I'm going to do this using the old school file, new project, and go with MVC. I'm going to go ahead and do new MVC for web application. We'll call this Notes. I'll go ahead and click OK. And I'm going to make it an internet application. All right, so there's our Notes app. One thing that I'll show you real quickly, I'm going to go ahead and hit Control F5 right here. Something about our templates that a lot of people haven't really noticed yet. If I unmaximize this and I start to shrink it, watch what happens. We get to a certain point and the text starts to wrap. Then I get to a certain point and those bullets are going to disappear. See that? The way we're doing that is using standard old CSS3 media queries. So what I'm saying is whenever the max width of the thing, of the page, is less than 850 pixels. If I scroll down here, where would it be? To these guys, you'll see that I'm setting the background to none. Otherwise, the background is whatever the number is. So it's 1, 2, 3, 4, 5. But in this particular case, what I'm doing is I'm hiding those because I know that somebody's looking at it on a skinny browser, such as a mobile device. So we're basically mobile, making these guys mobile friendly out of the box. Okay, just want to point that out. Close this down. Now what I'm going to do here is I'm going to go into my models and I'm going to create a new model. I'm going to call it a note. And I'm going to add a couple properties to it. First thing is going to be an ID. Second thing is going to be the text. Okay, so now I've added this guy. I'm going to do a quick compilation. And I'm going to right-click on controllers. I'm going to say add new controller. I'm going to call it note controller. And you'll see right here this option, MVC template that uses Entity Framework with all the scaffolding built in. Right here, I'll select note from this guy. And I'm going to say I want you to make a new data context. And that's cool. We'll just leave it called notes. And I'll click add here. And what's going to happen is it's going to basically use Entity Framework to scaffold not only a controller called note controller, but it's also going to scaffold all the pages for me for create, delete, edit, index, all those guys. It's going to create all those for me. What I'll do next is I'm going to go into app start and go into the route config. Notice this is no longer in your global ASAX file. We have this app start folder in which we do different configurations. So you've got your bundling configuration. You've also got your routing configuration in separate files. We heard a lot of complaints from people that they didn't like the fact that we were throwing so much stuff into the global ASAX file. So now we've separated all that stuff, put it in different CSS files, put it in app start, and it all runs whenever the application actually starts up. I'm going to point that out. What I'll do here is I'm going to scroll down, and I want to make my default route note so that I don't have to keep typing it. Honestly, just a lazy-ism. And you'll see here that in my notes controller, I've got a notes context. If I scroll down a little bit more, you'll see that I've got an index, and that's going to return a view. That's all the notes that it gets back from the database. If I want to get a detail view, if I want to do create, if I want to post a note because I've created a note on the client, it's going to get back, and it's going to be saved into the Entity Framework database stuff. So we've got all that right there. Now what I'll do is I'm going to open up the Package Manager console. Now, if you see this error, how many of you have seen this error before? If you're using Visual Studio 2012, pipeline will not run because the pipeline is already running. Or if you open that up and it's pointing like it, the same folder path that you have your website in, that's a known bug. It'll be fixed by RTM. So don't worry about that. It doesn't mean anything bad. I'm actually going to do a clear screen because it makes me paranoid. But it is a bug. We do know about it, and it will be fixed by RTM. And I don't like to see Scott Hunter's face every time he sees it. He actually shivers. It's really not pretty. Okay. So I just want to point out that that is a bug, and we know that it's there, and it'll be fixed soon. Now what I'm going to do is I'm going to type in enable migration. Type in enable migrations. And what that's going to do is that's going to give me the ability to enable the entity framework migrations using that data context, that notes context guy that I created. It's going to allow me to basically scaffold my database up and down. So I'll go ahead and click that, hit enter. And you'll see that in my project over here, there's a migrations folder. If I open that up, we'll see that there's a seed method. That's basically the function that will get run whenever I run another command that I'm going to run in a second called update database. So if I do a migration and then I call update database, all the code in my migration will be reflected in my database. That's the entity framework code first approach. It's my favorite approach of using entity framework personally. I used to use InHibernate a lot. This kind of reminds me of InHibernate, and it gives me all the stuff that I really liked in InHibernate, but it's all right here within Studio using PowerShell. Can't get better than that, right? So what I'll do now is I'm going to create some seed data, context.notes.add or update. I'm going to pass in a lambdas here, and my expression is going to basically say, I want you to look at the text property, or in the database, the text field, and just assume that nobody's going to enter in something with the same text property. And if you see something, I want you to update it. So if I pass in, remember the milk two times, it's going to go, oh, I've already got that one. And it's not going to do it again. Just an assumption being made. And the way I will do that is to say new note. I'm going to bring in my namespace here. And then I'll create a note and give it a text of remember groceries. Remember groceries. And I'll add another one. Text. Oh. Remember laundry. Gotta do your laundry, right? So we've got that guy. I'm gonna open up my Server Explorer over here. You'll see this notes context. There's probably nothing in it. Well, now I'm gonna do update database. I could do verbose, and it would actually spit out all the SQL for me. There's another switch if you have a really particular DBA in your office that's like, well, I'm not going to let you generate anything in my database. There's another switch there, and when you run it, it'll open up the SQL file directly in Visual Studio that you can then hand to your DBA and have him run it, and it'll create your database for you based on the structure right here. That way, you don't have to worry about all that nasty SQL. How many of you would love that life? No more SQL. Cool. Okay. Hopefully, you're with me on this one. So I'll do a build, and what I'll do here is I'm going to go ahead and expand this guy, expand the notes context. Of course, it's going to freak out on me. I'll hit refresh. I think it's going to actually run whenever I run the actual site. So I'll just hit F5 here. It's going to go to my notes page. I'm going to do create new. Da-da-da-da, create. Create new. Da-da-da-da, create. So there we go. Already done all that. Now, what if you realize I have a change that I have to make to my database? There's something I want to do. There's something I forgot to add. Like, I want to know the date that the note was created. I want to know what date it was that somebody actually created this note, or if it's something like a task list, my due date, like when I actually want to have it all done. So what I'll do here is I'll say prop, date time, created on, done. Now, I will go down here, and I'm going to do a clear screen, do a compilation just to make sure that I get everything. Do it again. Okay, so there's that. And now I'm going to do add migration, added, created, on, field. Hit enter. And it will have created that for me. Now, what you'll see is that it added this file over here in my migrations folder. Let's take a look at what that file contains. It contains two methods, up and down. So I can basically run any series of migrations on a database at any time that I want to and just put all the changes into the database. In the early days of any framework, it would actually drop your tables and recreate them for you. That's bad. We know that. That's why we fixed it and don't do it anymore. At this point, if we were to actually update the database, it's going to add that column to the database and we're going to be good to go. What I'll do is I'll change my seed method, if I can find it, configuration over here. We might get a demo fail here. Created on .now. Oh, .now. And we'll do it again over here. I don't think we seeded before for some reason, so I'll do a compilation. That way we know we're going to be getting something. And I could do something in here, like you'll see passing in seed date time, and you'll see that I'm saying nullable is equal to false. There's a couple of other properties here, such as default value or default value SQL. So I could do something really crazy like this. I could say select get date. So I can actually run SQL whenever somebody inserts something if I want the date to be right now. So that option does exist. I could also say default value and say date time dot now. So I just want to show you that those options do exist. And now that we've made that migration and we've recompiled, I'm going to go ahead and do a clear screen here and do update database. Hopefully it'll fly. There we go. Runs the seed method. Always good. And now I will come over here and run this. Hopefully it won't blow up on me because I've got blank fields and a couple of those guys. Very well may. See, now it ran the seed method. I hadn't compiled before. That's why we didn't get the seed to begin with. But if I go over here and I click edit, can't do it because I didn't add the field. But if I hit save here, we're probably going to get an error. It's going to say, hey, you're going to blow up because I can't save 1/1/1900 or whatever the default date is. So what I would do is I would go into my view file, which was handily created for us. I'm going to take this guy and I'm going to copy him down right here. And I'm going to do created on. Take that, paste it here. I'm going to paste it here. And now whenever I'll do that same thing in the edit. And we'll rerun it. And I'm going to show you something kind of neat. It knows that the entity that it's mapping to is a date time. You'll see right here, that's why it's going to blow up, because the default SQL is a little bit earlier than the default.NET. Things get a little hairy. What I'm going to do is I'm going to do a view source on this, and I'm going to scroll down until I see that text box created on. Now check this out. Type. Date time. Data type. Data typing is something new in HTML5. We've used that. So we're looking at the model, and we're adding HTML5 elements that you can make use of in your new HTML5 world, and you can do things with it. What would we want to do in this particular circumstance? A good example would be, and I have a cheat sheet that I'm going to copy some code from here, so forgive me. But let's say I want to make it kind of interesting looking, and I want to give somebody a date time picker. So I'm going to go in here, I'm going to look at my cheat sheet. Forgive me. A lot easier than typing all out and getting it wrong. I'm going to take this guy out. And the first thing that I'm going to do is in my create page, I'm going to scroll down here to the scripts area. And I'm going to add a script type equal to JavaScript. I'm going to paste this code in. And now I'm going to go up here and I'm going to render out another bundle. And the bundle that I'm going to render is going to be jQuery UI. Because I've done an import package jQuery UI. I believe that we actually give you jQuery UI out of the box. So whenever you do a new MVC project or a new web forms project, you're going to get jQuery, jQuery UI, Modernizer, and a couple of other guys. So you're going to get all kinds of good stuff in there. So what I'll do now is I'll rerun this. And this is on the create page. And I'll go to create. Oh, what happened? Did I not do something right? Oh, I got script doubled. You're right. Sorry. That's why I don't copy-paste code during demos. Sorry. And thank you for spotting that. I'll go back over here and I'll do a create. Look what we get there. Since it knows that the data type for that field that I'm going to capture in that guy is date time, it's going to go ahead and use jQuery UI to throw a date time picker directly on that text box so that when somebody clicks it, they don't have to actually type the date anymore. They can just click that. Now they're good to go. And that's going to be evident in a lot of the other controls that you're going to see in the ASP.NET runtime. So we've actually used jQuery and jQuery UI and jQuery Mobile to sort of make your applications a little bit more flexible and to use more of the HTML5 syntax. Cool. Everybody dig that okay? Pretty helpful? Now the last part we're going to take a peek at is going to be Web API and SignalR. And I've already shown a SignalR demo today, but I'll show a couple more, hopefully. I'm going to do new guy, do a new MVC project, and we'll just call it Web API demo. I'm going to click OK. And this time I'm going to select Web API and get this guy to come out. And what I'll do real quickly, because I don't want to use the default values, so what I'm going to do is I'm going to create a model here, add class, we'll call it person. I'm going to go over here and I'm going to say add controller. I'm going to call it person controller. And actually, let me do a compilation real quick. Say add controller, person controller. And I want to get a MVC controller with empty read write actions. It's not going to ask me which one. Another API controller read write actions. Model class, not that one. There, that's not it. I'll just do empty API controller. And I'll click add. Now, what's so nice about Web API over the WCF Web API that you may have seen in the WCF land is that this is built atop the whole REST idea with doing HTML, or excuse me, doing like harnessing the power of HTTP. So all your method names in here, if I were to do something like, I'll do a CTOR, and I didn't give my person class any stuff, so what I'll do is I'll say prop int ID, prop string name, we'll just leave it at that for now. And my guy, I'm going to create a list of people. People equal to new. Okay. And right here, I would say people is equal to new list. And then I could do people dot add new person. ID is equal to 1, name is equal to Scott Hunter. And I'll go ahead and copy that one line of code, put it right here, and then I'll do Hanselman. Put that right there. And what I'll do here is I'll say public, and I want to pass back a list of people. Actually, I want to pass back an IEnumerable of people. And I'll call that get. And right here, I'll do another one, and I'll say person. Get int ID, and I will return right here, people. Oh. And then this guy, I'll say return people first, and this probably isn't the best idea. We want to check and make sure if it's null or if we don't have any guys in there. So ID is equal to ID. So now I'm basically making a call directly to my repo for all intents and purposes. And getting everything back. And where this is going to live, I'll go ahead and run this for you. Pardon me? Oh, I will. Thank you. Going too fast here. Okay. Thank you for that. And that is the order, by the way. One of them reports to the other one. So. Now, my default route for any API controller is going to be /API, and just like with regular MVC, / whatever I called it. Did I call it person or did I call it people? So / person. So if I hit enter there, it's saying, do you want to open this? I'll go ahead and open it so you can see that's our JSON code. The default output is going to be JSON format. So there we've got one, or we've got both of them. And if I were to go here and say API / person and do one, I'll go ahead and do an open again. There's Scott Hunter. Do two. There's Scott Hanselman. So you can see how API works. Basically, I just make a request. I'm making a get request. So I'm going to go to the get method. If I pass a parameter, we're going to go to the get method that has a parameter. That's how easy it is to actually build readable APIs. Well, what if you want to send data up the wire? What if you actually want to post data? Guess what you would do? Public. I'll say IEnumerable. People. Oh, person. Post. And I want to post in a person. And in here we'll just say people.add person return. Oh. People. And the way we're going to test this is using Fiddler. So I'll open up Fiddler right here. Oh. No. Don't install the update. Please. I'm going to run this again. This time I'll just do the same sort of idea again. I'll go to API person. I don't necessarily need to open that, so I'll just hit cancel. But what I'm going to do is I'm going to go over here. You'll see this called an API person. And if I look at the raw data, there's our data. If I were to look at the JSON data, it's going to format that JSON data for us pretty nicely. So what I'll do is I'll go over here, put a breakpoint on this person guy. I will take this code. I actually need to take another piece of code at some point. I'm going to go to the composer. And this is something I always lunch on. Content type. Where is it? Raw. I'm going to take this. I'm going to go to my composer and I'm going to paste this right here. And I'm going to select post. Hopefully this will work okay. Ooh. Copy that. Paste it in here and I'll make the ID 3. I'm not going to put my own name. I would definitely not put myself in their category. I'll put Damien in there. And now I'm going to call execute. Oh, I need to take the URL. Copy it. Put this here. And then I'll say API person. And since I don't need to put the word post there, because I'm going to post data and it's going to directly go to the post method for me. It knows if you're doing an HTTP get, I'm going to run the get method. If I'm doing an HTTP post, I'm going to run the post method. It's a lot better than putting those funky attributes over, HTTP get, HTTP post. I'll go ahead and click execute, cross your fingers. There we go. There's person. There's Damien Edwards. So you see we've actually just posted data from within. You'll see we got all that back. So there's the 3 that we just added. Now, if I run this again, you're only going to see 3 because I'm actually instantiating that collection in the constructor every single time. So I can't add another one there. But you get the idea. You can post data using Web API. You can get data using Web API. And never the wiser. Okay, so that's that. And then the last thing that I'm going to do a demonstration of is going to do something called SignalR. And if you've already seen my SignalR talk, I apologize because you may have already seen this demo. But SignalR is the way we're going to be able to do real-time functionality, if I can find it, TE12. It's the way we're going to be able to do real-time functionality on the web. And what I'll do is I'll show you right here these references, and they're all yellow. I'm referencing SignalR. That is, again, a NuGet package. You can install that doing install-package-signalr, and it's going to pull down all the SignalR stuff. It's going to pull down all the assemblies and all the resources that you're going to need to do SignalR. And I'm going to comment out a line of code from my demo earlier. I'll just delete it. I don't want to do that. I'll just comment that out. And now I'm going to run this guy. I'll just run it into bug mode. And what we've got here is I've got this view. And this is an MVC app, but it doesn't have to be an MVC app. What I've got here is some server-side code in this guy called a chat hub. And chat hub extends what's called the signalr.hubs.hub object. And you'll see that I've got a method on it called sendMessage. And I'm passing it a dynamic. And then it's actually calling a method on the clients. That's every client that's currently connected to this hub simultaneously. So whenever I make a call to send message, it's going to turn around and call a method that lives on the client. If I were to open up this HTML file right here, you're going to see a few things. One is that I'm including a jQuery, that I'm including a JSON file because I was using a non-IE browser. And then I also have to include 2 other things. One is the jQuery SignalR plugin. SignalR completely works in a web browser client as a jQuery plugin. And then the last thing that I'm going to call is SignalR/hubs. That basically will go out and see all the different hubs that live in my web server and allow me to do stuff with them. I wire it up right here, and then I actually use jQuery's extend method, and I say whenever somebody calls the receive message on you, specifically whenever the hub calls the client, I want you to run the functionality in this particular method right here. Sorry, time is up, so if you want to go, I won't be offended, but we'll be done in about 2 minutes, and you'll like this. And then I'm going to call connection.hub.start. And what that does is, through jQuery, I'm going to open a live connection on the server to a hub, and I'm going to be able to communicate across multiple clients simultaneously. Again, I'm sorry if you were already in my SignalR demo and you saw this, but what I'm going to do is I'm going to type in Brady here. I'm going to type in Scott over here. I'm going to shrink all this down. And the reason I'm typing in Scott is because 50% of the people at Microsoft are actually named Scott. Hello, world. Hello, Scott. So we're going back and forth in real time. If I were to open up another browser client right here, type in another username, send a message, we'll see that everybody is going to get it. Cool. Please remember that this is all coming very, very soon. SignalR is already available as a NuGet package. It is an open source project that Damian Edwards and David Fowler, not Martin Fowler, it's very easy to get those two confused. They're probably equal in my world in terms of heroism because they do amazing work. But they wrote SignalR on the weekends in their spare time. It's an open source project. Just in case you haven't heard all the news, ASP.NET is also an open source project now. We've taken about a dozen pull requests from the community, people that think they can actually make it better, and have. And we're going to continue to do that. We're going to continue to make more and more use of our open source resources. You saw that I'm using .less.core in this project. That's because that's a guy that we really wanted to pull in. So now we're using that because it's such a popular component in the .NET world to do less compression that we just brought it in. We're actually using the JSON.NET JSON serializer rather than our own serializer because it did more stuff, it had better features, and it worked better. So we just brought it in, and we give it to everybody now whenever you do your NuGet packaging. Okay, so whenever you pull that down, you get all this stuff out of the box. So I want to show you all that and talk about how we're open source and all that good stuff. And the last thing I want to say is, if you've enjoyed it or if you've hated it, either way, please fill out your evals. If you were in my earlier talk, please fill out your eval for that as well. That's how we know we're either doing well or we're doing poorly. And I want to thank you all for sticking around to the very, very, very last minute of the conference and then some, being here for me. Thanks a lot.